Our third speaker this morning is Brother Jesse Adair from the Hamilton Book Road, Ontario, Canada Ecclesia. The theme for Brother Jesse's classes this week is The Last King of Judah. Today's class is entitled The Yoken King. Brother Jesse.
If in your Bibles you would turn with me to 2 Kings chapter 24, Zedekiah was going to take up the throne of Judah. But in that throne, that kingdom of which he was going to occupy its position as head and over all of it, he was going to come into a scenario where Nebuchadnezzar had significantly diminished that kingdom in all its vitality. And if I asked you in your head to answer, what were the three things of which Nebuchadnezzar had diminished? They would be these three things. He had diminished the money, he had diminished the marriages, and he had diminished the military. And in 2 Kings chapter 24, here are the three in succession. Verse 13. In these wave of attacks, Nebuchadnezzar carried out thence the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house. He cut in pieces all the vessels of gold which Solomon, king of Israel, had made in the temple of the Lord, as the Lord had said. And so there in verse 13 of 2 Kings 24, Nebuchadnezzar diminished the money. Verse 14 and verse 15. Nebuchadnezzar carried away all Jerusalem, all the princes, all the mighty men of valor, even 10,000 captives, and all the craftsmen and smiths. None remained save the poorest of the people of the land. And he carried away Jehoiachin to Babylon, and the king's mother, and the king's wives. And here in verse 14 and 15, Nebuchadnezzar, he diminished the marriages. All the prospects that had been built up, Zedekiah was going to come in bereft of all these lineal marriage connections. And finally, in verse 16, not only had Nebuchadnezzar diminished the money, he had diminished the marriages, but he had diminished the military. Because of all the men of might, even 7,000, craftsmen, smiths, 1,000, all that were strong and apt for war, even the king of Babylon brought captive to Babylon. And so there in verse 16 of 2 Kings 24, the third of these three things of which Nebuchadnezzar had diminished, the money, the marriages, and the military. And these were the three things in Deuteronomy 17, that the king was not to multiply. So you're Zedekiah. You're about to take the throne. And the urge is staring you right in the face that the very three things that Deuteronomy 17 says you were not to multiply, you would want to multiply. You would want to multiply the money, the marriages, and the military. But to add insult to injury, in verse 17 of 2 Kings 24, Nebuchadnezzar, in demonstrating his utter authority over this king, he changed his name. Because verse 17 says of 2 Kings 24, and the king of Babylon made Mattaniah, his father's brother, king in his stead, and changed his name to Zedekiah. Now, brothers and sisters, we probably don't appreciate what it would feel like to have our name changed. There's something about our name. It's a part of our identity. You know, you take, for example, the working brothers in our midst, or those who have gone through the working years. There are times when our title is changed. And sometimes that title is a great thing. It's an improvement. We are perhaps moving up with maybe more responsibility, or maybe a better creative side of our work that enlivens us. But imagine you were getting demoted and you were losing a title, or you got fired and you had no title. That is probably the closest we can appreciate that when your name is changed, the one who has changed it is the authority over you. And what a paradox it is, because this individual, which we're looking at, he was a king. There's not supposed to be anyone over me. And what probably made it even worse is in verse 18 was the age of Zedekiah. Because verse 18 of 2 Kings 24 says Zedekiah was 21 years old when he began to reign. If this isn't coming into the prime years of a young man's life, then I don't know what is. The prime years where he wants to prosper, where he wants his kingdom to be a golden age. And he's just had his kingdom diminished. He's just had his name changed. He certainly has an authority over him. And not only this young man, 21 years of age, Zedekiah, was going to have Nebuchadnezzar over him, Nebuchadnezzar is going to put something on his shoulders, which is going to be heavy to bear. And that is going to be our second class this morning in this consideration of the last king of Judah, Zedekiah, the Jotham king. And what we're going to look at, God willing, this morning is three things. There is going to be a yoke of captivity of which the people who've been brought into captivity are going to have to bear. There is going to be the yoke of Babylon, that when they arrive in this domain of Babylon, that they are going to have to determine whether they will accept it. But there is also going to be a yoke of God spoken by a mighty prophet that they should take this upon their shoulders. And this yoke is going to be introduced to Zedekiah in the book of Jeremiah. Now come with me to Jeremiah chapter 29, where we will spend numerous times in the book of Jeremiah going through this story of the last king of Judah. So come with me to Jeremiah chapter 29, and this is where this yoke is going to be introduced to Zedekiah here in the book of Jeremiah. Now you might have a heading ahead of Jeremiah chapter 29, and it might have some idea of a letter that is going to be written to the captives. And that's what Jeremiah 29 is going to detail for us. This letter, these captives have gone in, Nebuchadnezzar has come in his four waves and deported the Jews. And so, in Jeremiah chapter 29, we're going to learn about this letter that was written to the exiles. And here's how we sort of begin this story in verse 1 of Jeremiah 29. Now, these are the words of the letter that Jeremiah the prophet sent from Jerusalem unto the residue of the elders which were carried away captives, and to the priests, and to the prophets, and to all the people whom Nebuchadnezzar had carried away captive from Jerusalem to Babylon. After that, Jeconiah, the king, and the queen, and the eunuchs, and the princes of Judah, and Jerusalem, and the carpenters, smiths, were deported from Jerusalem. By the hand of Elasa, the son of Shaphan, and Gemariah, the son of Hilkiah, whom Zedekiah, king of Judah, sent unto Babylon to Nebuchadnezzar. Now, there's two things I want us to take note of. There is going to be a letter written by Jeremiah. Zedekiah is going to know about this letter, and, more importantly, he's going to know about its contents. So whatever is in this letter that Jeremiah is writing and is going to be sent to the exiles, Zedekiah is going to know about it, and he's going to know about the contents. So this is not just a message for those in exile. This is a message for those that are still in the land. And so these exiles are going to be told to accept what they were to do in Babylon because they were going to be there for quite some time. And here's how the letter opens in verse 4 of Jeremiah 29. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, unto all that are carried away captives, whom I have caused to be carried away from Jerusalem unto Babylon. Build ye houses and dwell in them. Plant gardens and eat the fruit of them. Take ye wives and beget sons and daughters. Take wives for your sons and give your daughters to husbands, that they may bear sons and daughters, that ye may be increased there and not diminished. And verse 7 says, and seek the peace of the city whither I have caused you to be carried away captives, and pray unto the Lord for it. For in the peace thereof shall ye have peace. peace. Now, if you have a pencil or sort of a coloring pencil, there's one key word that I want to take note of, and it's this word captives. And you would have noticed that in verse 1, twice we come across this word captives, that the elders which were carried away captives, Jeremiah 29, verse 1. At the end of verse 1, whom Nebuchadnezzar had carried away captive from Jerusalem to Babylon. So there in verse 1, we have two times this word captive. And then in verse 4, unto all that are carried away captive. And in verse 7, I have caused you to be carried away captive. Now, these captives were in a position where there was going to be someone over them. It was going to be Nebuchadnezzar. And they were told to do three things. And here there are the three things in verse 5 and 6. So you might like to put a 1 and a 2 and a 3, but here are the three things. That these captives, if they were to be increased and not diminished, they should do these three things. Verse 5. Build ye houses and dwell in them. Plant ye gardens and eat the fruit of them. Take ye wives and beget sons and daughters. Now let's try and put those three things in our own sort of vernacular so they have sort of a resonance with us in modern day, okay? Now, when it says to build a house and to dwell in them, that is clearly a man's home. You are building a house, you are dwelling in it. You have a man's home. Now, how about planting a garden and eating the fruit of them? That, I suggest to you, is a man's work, his toil and his labor. And taking a wife and having sons and daughters, that is a man's family. Every facet of wholesome life is encompassed in these three things. A man's home, a man's work, and a man's family. Can you think of any other facet of wholesome life that a man will endeavor to allow to flourish? His home, his work, and his family. And these are the three things that these captives are being told to do in Babylon. And they are great things. They're tremendous things. They're things which we should focus on. We should focus on having a home, which is a godly place. It is good that a man has an occupation that has integrity and provides. And it is excellent with a good reward that a godly family grow. These are wholesome things that these captives were told to increase and not to have diminished. And even though they were physically captive, they were not to think that they were spiritually captive. Because in verse 8 and in verse 9, for thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, let not your prophets and your diviners that be in the midst of you deceive you, and neither hearken to your dreams which ye have been caused to dream, for they prophesy falsely unto you in my name. I have not sent them, saith the Lord. Because what was going to happen is there was going to be these false prophets that were going to arise, and they were going to try and take these physically captive Israelites and make them spiritually captive. And there's going to be this contest between those that are true prophets and those that are false prophets. Clearly, Jeremiah is a true prophet, telling them what they should do in Babylon. But there were going to arrive these false prophets and say a different message. And it was going to be quite important because of the time that they were going to be in Babylon. Because you see in verse 10, this is how long they were going to be in Babylon. For thus saith the Lord, that after 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good words towards you in causing you to return to this place. Now, brothers and sisters, 70 years, okay? There's lots you could say about the significance of the number 70. But as it pertains to a man's life, what's so significant about 70? You're old at 70, is one of the comments. But that's what you were promised. That's how long you were promised to live. 80 if there's strength. So 70 years is your entire life that you were to do these things. And the key was that if you did these things, you would be increased, verse 6, and you would not be diminished. And if they could accept this message, then God would actually remove them from their captivity. Because in verse 11, "For I know the thoughts that I think towards you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace, not evil, to give you an expected end. Then shall you call upon me, and ye shall go and pray unto me, and I will hearken unto you. And ye shall seek me and find me, when ye shall search for me with all your heart. And I will be found of you, saith the Lord, and I will turn away your captivity. And I will gather you from all the nations and from all the places whither I have driven you, saith the Lord, and I will bring you again into this place whence I have caused you to be carried away captive." And so you notice two more times we see this word arrive in verse 14. The captivity and the captive, it will be turned again. So this letter that Jeremiah was writing, for a time, the kingdom of Judah and the king of Judah was going to have to accept this message in this letter of Jeremiah 29. And the interesting thing is, they did. They did accept the contents of this letter. Now, in the story of the Bible, Brother H.P. Mansfield, he has this to say on page 214. He says, "The influence upon King Zedekiah. 4 years of his reign went by. The terrible shock of the invasions and the captivity lessened in the minds of the people, though. They began to congratulate themselves that they had not been so affected and to cast about for a reason for this favor. False prophets seized upon the general attitude by spreading the idea that those left in the land, those poorest sort of people, were really the favored of God, whilst those who had been taken away in exile and had been justly punished for their misdeeds. The deadly dope of this false teaching had the effect of blinding the people left in the land to their own disloyal attitude to Yahweh. Zedekiah was influenced by such smooth teaching. His pride was also fed when ambassadors came to his capital from the surrounding nations. Stimulated by Egyptian intrigue, the smaller nations were plotting to oppose Babylon. Flattered by such attention, the weak king was disposed to forget the oath he had so easily entered into with Nebuchadnezzar and prepared to join this new anti-Chaldean coalition. But he was arrested in so doing by a remarkable action performed by Jeremiah the prophet." Now just come back with me to Jeremiah chapter 27. Because for 4 years in Zedekiah's reign, he had accepted that those captives would be in captivity, that they were to increase, that they were to fall under the over authority of Babylon. But then there would be whispers, there would be innuendo, there would be those that would say, "Oh, but really?" And false prophets would begin to arrive in Zedekiah's court. Now, something to look at in Jeremiah chapter 27 is there is something we have to sort of look at with the marginal references. Because when you read a verse 1 of Jeremiah chapter 27, in the King James it renders this way, "In the beginning of the reign of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, came this word unto Jeremiah from the Lord, saying." Now, you might have some marginal references that actually point you in the direction that it's not to be Jehoiakim who is on the throne at this time. It's actually Zedekiah. And I'll give you a couple proof verses so you feel rest assured that we are in the right idea. So what you notice is in verse 3, at the end of verse 3, that these messengers which come to Jerusalem of Jeremiah 27, they actually come to Zedekiah, king of Judah. So verse 3 supports the idea that it's actually Zedekiah who's on the throne. Verse 12 at the beginning, Jeremiah says, "I spake also to Zedekiah, king of Judah, according to all these words." So verse 3 and verse 12, they support that Zedekiah is on the throne. And finally, in verse 20 tells us that the reign of Jehoiakim has already come and gone. Because verse 20 of Jeremiah 27 says, which Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, took not when he carried away captive Jeconiah, that's Jehoiachin, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, from Jerusalem to Babylon. So these three verses, also in tandem with your marginal reference, if you have them, would strongly suggest that we are not dealing with Jehoiakim in his reign. We are actually dealing with Zedekiah in his. Verse 3, verse 12, verse 20, and the marginal references. And in fact, just to sort of help emphasize the point with the books in our community, Brother C.C. Walker, on the Ministry of Jeremiah, page 128, he says this about Jeremiah 27, verse 1. The authorized version, this 27th chapter, begins thus. In the beginning of the reign, Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, came this word unto Jeremiah from the Lord. But Jehoiakim here should probably be Zedekiah, as the margin of the AV suggests, and as the margin of the RV points out, properly Zedekiah, as in some ancient authorities. Now, the reason why that's important, just to sort of set the stage, and I trust that you'll believe these things are so, is that what is going to happen in Jeremiah 27, Zedekiah is going to be witness to all of it. And what is going to happen that Jeremiah is going to perform in front of Zedekiah is going to cause Zedekiah to have a decision to make. Because for 4 years in the reign of Zedekiah, Jeremiah had written a letter. But now 4 years in and these false prophets are springing up, Jeremiah is going to have to wear a yoke. And that's exactly what he does in verse 2 of Jeremiah 27. Thus saith the Lord to me, make thee bonds and yokes, and put them upon thy neck, and send them to the king of Edom, to the king of Moab, to the king of the Ammonites, to the king of Tyre, and to the king of Zidon, by the hand of the messengers which come to Jerusalem, unto Zedekiah, king of Judah. And you would probably have noticed that these line of kings are strategically located in and around the kingdom of Judah. And they are what we might call confederate kings. So the king of Edom, the king of Moab, the king of Ammon, the king of Tyre, the king of Zidon, and they are coming to the throne room, Jerusalem, verse 3, to King Zedekiah. And all these kings are going to come up to Zedekiah with a proposition. And Zedekiah now is about 25 years of age. And 4 years ago, the letter was written to the captives. And for 4 years, the kingdom under Zedekiah, it prospered. It increased. But these kings that are going to come up to Jerusalem to speak to Zedekiah, they have another idea. And Zedekiah is going to have to determine which way he will fall. Now, in order to help us sort of pick up what is going on here, I'm going to give you a suggested breakdown of Jeremiah 27, and it is this way in order to sort of give us like the high-level points of this whole chapter. In verses 1 to 11, Jeremiah's yoked address to the neighbors of Judah. Verses 12 to 15, Jeremiah's yoked address to the king of Judah. And thirdly, Jeremiah's yoked address to the priests and people of Judah, verses 16 to 22. And so if you like a good breakdown, as I do, it helps to sort of get you a sense of what is happening in this chapter. Jeremiah is going to actually have a yoke upon his shoulder. He's going to give an address to the neighbors of Judah, these kings that have come up. Then he's going to turn his attention to one man, the king of Judah, and give a yoked address. And then Jeremiah is going to focus his last address on the priests and the people of Judah. Now, I don't know if you do this at home during the readings, but we do because our children are of that age, where an object lesson is tremendous. You know, I remember we were doing a reading, and in the reading there was an anointing taking place. It's very difficult if you're a type A personality like me, because you're like, I'm going to get some oil out and maybe run it down my children's head, and then I have to clean them up afterwards. So it's kind of like, do I do this? Well, it's the benefit of the children, so you kind of do it. And if you do that at home during the readings, you know that an object lesson is incredibly powerful. And for the children, it just sticks with them. And be careful, though, when you do one object lesson, because guess what will happen? The kids will ask for more, okay? So you better be prepared with your creative mind on hand. But an object lesson is incredibly powerful because it sticks in the mind. It's almost like the idea, I will hear an exhortation, but boy, I would also love to see one. Because what Jeremiah is going to do is he's going to come in and he's going to have this wooden yoke upon his shoulders. And as he speaks these words, they're going to hear his words, but they're going to see that yoke. And this is what Jeremiah was to do. Verse 4 of Jeremiah 27. Command them to say unto their masters, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, thus shall you say to your masters, I have made the earth, the man and the beast that are upon the ground, by my great power and by my outstretched arm, and have given it unto whom I seem meet unto me. And now have I given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, my servant. And the beast of the field have I given him also to serve him. Now this initial command to Jeremiah is that he is going to send this message to, verse 3, the kings of all these nations. The kings of all these nations. The yokes that are going to be placed upon these kings, Jeremiah is saying it's like placing a yoke upon the beast. And what do you think these kings are going to respond with? How do you think these kings are going to respond? Jeremiah is saying they were to lower themselves to the level of a beast who bears the burden of the yoke. Because you see in verse 5 and in verse 6, the beasts that are upon the ground. Verse 6, the beasts of the field. This is what God is saying to these kings. And because you are beasts, then you should be wearing this yoke. And if they couldn't humble themselves to serve, then one day in the future, they would be made to serve. Because you also notice in verse 6, what God called Nebuchadnezzar, my servant. And the beast of the field have I given also to serve him. And verse 7 says, and all nations that shall serve him and his son's son, through the 70 years, until the very time of this land come, then many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of him. And you would have noticed there in verse 6 and 7, four times we have this idea of service. A servant, serve. Verse 7, serve. Verse 7 again, serve. And the message was clear. These kings were being told that they had to become servants. And they had to make the choice. Because if they didn't choose to be a servant, God would make them. Because verse 8 of Jeremiah 27, and it shall come to pass that the nation and the kingdom which will not serve the same Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and that will not put their neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon, that nation will I punish, saith the Lord, with the sword, with the famine, with the pestilence, until I have consumed them by the hand. And so what you have in verse 6, two times, serve, servant and serve. Verse 7, serve twice. Verse 8, serve. And you had to put your neck under this yoke. It was very clear. And their punishment, if their kingdoms would not serve, was they were going to receive these three judgments. Verse 8, the sword, the famine, the pestilence. Now sometimes we come across these three in succession, right? And I find also it's helpful if we try and identify really what are those judgments. The sword, the famine, the pestilence. So I'm going to suggest to you these three things. The sword will come from your enemies. The famine will come from nature. And pestilence will come from within. Because if you think about it, the sword was going to come from their enemies. And they'd be judged by that enemy. Famine was going to come from nature. It would not produce, and they'd be judged by it. And pestilence, disease, would come from within, mortality. And no matter where you turned, the sword, famine, or pestilence, you'd be fraught with evil from your enemy, evil from nature, evil from within. No matter where you turned, if you did not serve, you would find judgment. And these kings would not only need to cast away their pride, but they would also have to forsake the prophets who had their ear. Because in verse 9 of Jeremiah 27, therefore hearken not to your prophets, nor to your diviners, nor to your dreamers, nor to your enchanters, nor to your sorcerers, which speak unto you, saying, you shall not serve the king of Babylon. For they prophesy a lie unto you, to remove you far from your land, that I should drive you out, and ye should perish. And they had so many individuals in their ears, no wonder why these kings couldn't really decipher between a clear message from Jeremiah and all those who were speaking these false words like prophets or diviners, dreamers, enchanters, sorcerers. So I'm also going to suggest to you, and if you want to have a chat about it, feel free afterwards, but the prophets, they would have foretold things through their idols. Who has said, here's our idol, and the idol has said thus, the prophets. The diviners, they would have foretold things through the animals. They would have cut open an animal and said, oh, it's missing of this, and that means that. The dreamers, they would have said they were foretelling things through revelations. Who had a revelation? The enchanters, they were foretelling things through nature, signs in nature, the clouds, ooh, the thunder. And the sorcerers, they would foretell things through magic. You know, it's remarkable, because these kings, they surround themselves with all sorts of, you know, different disciplines. You know, I got my prophets if I want to hear from the idols. I got my diviners if I want to hear what's going on with the animals. The dreamers give me a revelation. The enchanters tell me things about nature. The sorcerers all about magic. You know, nothing new under the sun, brothers and sisters, but these kings would have been inundated with senseless knowledge that was utterly empty. And that is a huge challenge for us today, is it not? We are inundated with senseless knowledge, which really, most of the time, is completely empty. And what happens is we fill our world with the avenues to receive that senseless knowledge, and we're so bombarded that when someone like a Jeremiah with a yoke on his shoulder steps up and says, look, all you got to do is serve, they were almost like desensitized to the simplicity of the message. Isn't that so true? If we kind of step back and we think about it, what we might do is when we go away from this Bible school, we might say, you know what? This is my prophet. This is my diviner. Well, that's the dreamer I've got. That's the enchanter that's in my life. I can't stand that sorcerer. And we would just get rid of it. Because what Jeremiah said in verse 10, at the end of the day, all they do is lie. They just prophesy a lie. But God always says, if you get rid of this, which is a hindrance to you, you might actually find the blessing. Because in verse 11 of Jeremiah 27, but the nations that bring their neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon and serve him, those will I let remain still in their own land, saith the Lord, and they shall till it, and they shall dwell therein. And so here now, what we start to see is, isn't that key word of this chapter, servant, serve, to serve? And now we're folding in another key word, which is this word yoke. Because in verse 2, Jeremiah was told, make thee bonds and a yoke. In verse 8, anyone who will not put their neck under the yoke. Verse 11, but the nations that bring their neck under the yoke. And what you will want to do is maybe in your own time, but in Jeremiah 27 and in Jeremiah 28, that key word yoke keeps coming up. So if you're one of those individuals that likes a word to just pop out, so that when you come here in the readings or you're reading it later, you definitely know what one of the key themes is. In fact, also on your own time, in Jeremiah 27, the word serve will appear no less than 10 times. So if you're one of those keeners that just loves that tactile learning, getting that pencil out, then the word serve in Jeremiah 27, no less than 10 times is going to appear. So, you're Judah's neighbors. You had to hear the yoke of Babylon. You're being told you had to put it upon your shoulder. But in verse 12, Zedekiah is going to have to decide, how am I going to respond? Because verse 12 of Jeremiah 27, Jeremiah says, I spake also to Zedekiah, king of Judah. He turned his attention from Judah's neighbors, these kings who were really beasts to have a yoke upon their shoulders. Would they serve? No, they wouldn't. And he turns in verse 12 to Zedekiah, king of Judah. And he said, according to these words, verse 12, bring your necks under the yoke of the king of Babylon and serve him and his people and live. For why will you die? Thou and thy people, by the sword, and by the famine, and by the pestilence, that the Lord has spoken against the nation that would not serve the king of Babylon. And the choice before Zedekiah was going to be this. You bear the yoke, you become a servant, you will live. You and all your people, and all your house. But if you refuse the yoke, and you reject being a servant, you will die. You and all your people. And all your house. That was the clear message which Jeremiah presented to Zedekiah then and there wearing that yoke. He couldn't make it any more plain. It was two choices. You can live or you can die. But one involves humility. And the other involves pride. But then we have to feel for this Zedekiah, brothers and sisters, because he was now 25. He was in such the prime of his life. He wanted his king to grow, but I had to be a servant. And he had something in his life which was going to weigh him down because he hadn't got rid of it. Now, what was that something? Well, in verse 14 to 15, here was that something. And you notice the repetition of this phrase. In verse 10, all these somethings in his life, they were prophesying a lie. Well, look at verse 14 and 15. Therefore, hearken not unto the words of the prophets that speak unto you, saying, you shall not serve the king of Babylon, for they prophesy a lie unto you. For I have not sent them, saith the Lord, yet they prophesy a lie in my name, that I might drive you out, and that you might perish, ye and the prophets that prophesy unto you. And so three times here in verse 10, 14, and 15, Zedekiah had something in his life that was hindering him. And so much was it hindering him that it was prophesying a lie to him. He was deceived. Now, brothers and sisters, one of the incredible things about God's word is it calls to us and it whispers to us the still small voice in the privacy of our own reading. When we go away from the Bible school and we meditate upon what God is telling us to do, and God says, if you could only get rid of what you know is hindering you, you'll live. We had a youth conference in 2012, and the topic was on Jehoshaphat. It was exceptional. And the brother came, and he did a splendid series on music. And you want to see Christadelphians sort of like get the Dukes out and start duking it out, you want to talk about music, okay? It's one of those topics you think, really, music? Wow, okay, music, I guess. And he was talking about qualities of godly music, criteria of what we might listen to, how the scriptures resonate with what music should be about. And he just listed them very simply. And not only did it have good scriptural references, he also had an incredible ability with music. So not only could he talk the talk, but he certainly could walk the walk. And there were some you could tell at that conference. They didn't want to have a bar of it, to use an Australian expression. No way. I'm going to hold on to my music. And then there were some in the conference, you could definitely tell they were changed. Now, at that conference, 2012, I was still having these CDs. Oh, I just aged myself. But I had CDs from Pentecostals. Because, you know, Pentecostals and Baptists, you want to go to a service? You go to a megachurch service and 45 minutes of singing is mandatory. You're jumping in the aisles, you're doing cartwheels, you get it. There's a concert going on. And these Pentecostal CDs were so good. They moved you. You started clapping and dancing. You know, the hands were above your head, just waving everywhere. And I still had them. And I still listened to them. But then this brother, he made me think about the lyrics and about the actual music. And I got to tell you, I went home, pitched them. And I didn't send them to the Goodwill because someone else will pick them up. I just trashed them. Now, that is a personal anecdote of something that was definitely a hindrance to the clarity of thought. Maybe they had some wholesome components to them. Sure they did. But they were a hindrance. You know, brothers and sisters, we all know in our own lives there's going to be a hindrance for us. And the challenging thing with Zedekiah is when you're young, it's so difficult to get rid of them because you are creating your identity. And you feel like by getting rid of them, a piece of you is missing. And I suppose as we get older, we have more clarity of thought. And we look back with maturity and experience and say, actually, we can do without that. But with Zedekiah, he had in his court those that were prophesying a lie. And he was going to have to choose between two types of prophets. The true prophet, which was Jeremiah, and the false prophet, which was a man named Hananiah. Now, what we find is if you move into Jeremiah chapter 28, we are going to see that this is going to be a contest between two prophets, Jeremiah on the one side and Hananiah on the other side. Because what's going to happen is in verse 1 of Jeremiah 28, it came to pass the same year in the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the fourth year and in the fifth month, that a man named Hananiah, the son of Azur, the prophet, which was of Gibeon, spake unto Jeremiah in the house of the Lord in the presence of the priests and all the people, saying, and notice what Hananiah is going to say, verse 2, 3, and 4. Here's his message. And just notice how it stands in opposition to what Jeremiah has said to Zedekiah. Verse 2. Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, saying, I've broken the yoke of the king of Babylon. For within two full years will I bring again into this place all the vessels of the Lord's house that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, took away of this place, carry them to Babylon. And I will bring again to this place Jehoiachin, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, with all the captives of Judah that went into Babylon, saith the Lord. For I will break the yoke of the king of Babylon. You could not get a more stark contrast to what Jeremiah has said. Jeremiah has said, you've got to wear this yoke, and you've got to put it on your shoulders for upwards of 70 years. And in Jeremiah 28, verses 2, 3, and 4, a man named Hananiah steps forward and says, actually, in 2 years, that yoke's going to be broken. And you know what is incredibly difficult for Zedekiah? Is you notice what Hananiah is called in verse 1. He's called the prophet. So he's got the title. Verse 2, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel. So he's got the words. And he's dealing with the same themed message. What's going to happen to this yoke? Whew, you're Zedekiah. You got Jeremiah on one side. He's called the prophet. He's using thus saith the Lord. He's dealing with the yoked addressed. And now I got Hananiah, this man over here. He's also called the prophet. He's saying thus saith the Lord. And he's dealing with the yoked addressed. So what do you do? Well, Jeremiah in verses 5 to 9, he reiterates to Zedekiah And he also says about the prophet who is standing juxtaposed him. He says, verse 5, "The prophet Jeremiah said unto the prophet Hananiah, in the presence of the priests, in the presence of the people that stood in the house of the Lord, even the prophet Jeremiah said, Amen. The Lord do so. The Lord perform thy words which thou hast prophesied to bring again the vessels of the Lord's house and all that is carried away captive from Babylon into this place. May it be so. But nevertheless, hear thou now this word that I speak in thine ears and in the ears of all the people. The prophets that have been before me and before thee of old prophesied both against many countries and against great kingdoms of war and of evil and of pestilence. The prophet which prophesieth of peace, when the word of that prophet shall come to pass, then shall the prophet be known that the Lord hath truly sent him." And Jeremiah evokes the words of Deuteronomy 18. And he says, Zedekiah, you know the law. Because in Deuteronomy 17 it said you had to write it out. And the very next chapter, God gave you the wisdom of how you are to know which prophet is a true prophet. The words that they say, if they come to pass, then that has been sent by the Lord. So verse 10 says, "Then Hananiah the prophet took the yoke from off the prophet Jeremiah's neck, and to show a sign of force in his own eyes, Hananiah smashed the yoke on the ground, breaks it to pieces. And Hananiah spake," verse 11, "in the presence of all the people, saying, Thus saith the Lord, even so will I break the yoke of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, from the neck of all nations within the space of 2 full years. And the prophet Jeremiah went his way." So you're Zedekiah. You've been told to serve. You're the prime of life. But you have these hindrances which are causing you to have clouded judgment. You have a prophet over here on one side, Jeremiah, who says it's going to be a long time. You have a prophet over here, Hananiah, who says, no, it'll be short. And your decision is going to have irrecoverable damages and consequences, not only upon yourself, but upon your people and upon your family. And then something's going to happen to Zedekiah. Because Zedekiah is going to be summoned to Babylon right after this happens. And Nebuchadnezzar is going to bring Zedekiah before him into Babylon. And he's going to look straight into the eyes of Zedekiah. And he's going to say, are you going to keep your oath of service? And in that months-long journey, Zedekiah is going to have in his mind a choice. To either listen to Jeremiah or listen to Hananiah. But one thing is sure, that when he arrives in Babylon and he stands before that king, he will have to decide, will I be an oathen king who keeps his oath? And God willing, that we will consider in class 3, Zedekiah, the oathen king.